This is a podcast-only version of the musings, whatever I'm calling it nowadays, Alicia's musings, perhaps. And it's not something you're going to see as a YouTube video, because I wanted to read you what I wrote, because I felt like that would be a little bit more authentic. I find that on camera, trying to improvise things that are personal is a little bit more challenging, and I think I did a better job saying what I was trying to say in written form. It'll be a little bit of an exploration, and the title of this is Tears. I'm going to talk about crying this episode. We're going to do a little bit of exploration on the idea of crying, and what's good crying, and what's bad crying, but we'll see how this goes. Thank you for joining me today. I am someone who is easily brought to tears. I cry when I'm happy, when I'm sad, when I feel love, when I'm moved by art, and when I'm frustrated. It is a rare week when my eyes do not well up for one reason or another. Every movie I watch, every movie. I'm not talking about the Notebook type movies, although that one had me weeping ugly tears for 30 minutes post-viewing. I'm talking about maybe a precious moment in Palm Springs, which is an Andy Samberg comedy, or a moment of soul synchronization in Bo Burnham's Inside, which is another comedy. It doesn't even matter if I like the movie or not. The Notebook, for example, is not my favorite, but still, ugly tears. Most concerts have me weeping at one point or another, too. The swell of the symphony, the magic of so many artists cohering in harmony. A tender, pure-hearted moment at a mother-mother concert when the crowd is jubilant. Interestingly, though I suppose obviously, I have typically chosen partners who are the opposite. Partners who seldom, if ever, shed a tear. Stoic types. Stable types. Standing in great contrast to them, I often wonder what the hell is wrong with me. At times it does feel like a problem. Sometimes it's an awkward or embarrassing problem, like with wiping away errant tears while watching The Land Before Time with your mother and child. And at other times it's a physical problem, because a bad crying spell can give me headaches that linger for hours. Sometimes crying feels okay, necessary even, like an expression of my being, a gesture, just like raising my arms. Other times it feels like a sickness, and it seems that something is definitely wrong with me. First, I've realized that the experience of crying is not a homogenous one for me. These tears are neither all bad or all good or all neutral all the time. On one hand, the tears are sometimes the result of what might be deemed a sickness because they hurt me, and they have nothing to do with flourishing. On the other hand, the tears can be magic. They can be a signal that I'm alive and that life is beautiful. It's a checkpoint of sorts. And here I'm going off script a little bit because I wanted to just elaborate on this really briefly. I have these moments where if something brings tears to my eyes, I remember that I'm on the right track. It's this feeling of, yes, I've found the save point in the video game of my life, whatever that might mean. There's some sense of, I'm in the right direction. So if I have an idea or a thought, something that moves me to tears, maybe I'm thinking about a particular hot button issue that I care about, that shows me that I care. And when I feel in my heart that there's caring there, then that is a really good directional guide. It's sort of like a, not to overuse the terminology, but a little bit of an emotional North Star that I'm pointed in the North direction. That whatever I'm feeling in this moment is a result of caring, being really interested, or just maybe something really resonating with me on a level that I don't even necessarily understand, but that feels right, that feels something like me. Anyways, because of this, it's unhelpful to globally condemn the tears, because they're not all good, they're not all bad, they're not all neutral all the time. So let's talk about the sickness tears. What happens with this? Imagine an invisible link between you and all things. And please bear with me, this will get a little abstract. Animate, inanimate, doesn't matter. This invisible link, should you pursue it, allows a connection. It's fairly easy to connect with a cat, or a favorite person, or a great album. That invisible tether to the sound from the record player when it's hitting the right notes, that felt moment of, yes, more of this. The connection begins and you can pass through it like Mario through a pipe. The connection expands along with you. You can go deeper. Or you can pull back and return to normalcy. Just a chill vibe here, just a regular Sunday afternoon, no funny business, no siree. All is normal. The stronger the connection, the deeper down the pipe, the more expansion with the feeling. That's the moment. And all of these books about being present, being here, living in the moments, and all of these motivational posters, and that wiggly thought that inchworms through your mind during a meditation session. Be present, damn it. That's what it is. It's a connection. It's escaping the ordinary and having a relationship with something. A feeling, a sound, a cat, a couch, a blue sky, a patch of brown-eyed Susans, a friend's story, a child's stream of consciousness. You open the channel and connect to it. You cannot be in any moment without connecting to it, without having a relationship with it. If you watch moments go by like a third-party apparition hovering overhead, you're not in a moment, you're watching it. To be is to become. You are the music. You are the cat. You are the child stream of consciousness. You aren't watching it from on high. Maybe in some way there isn't even a you anymore. To be free of oneself for an instant. To breathe. To not give a damn about one's personal history or solid personality traits or likes or dislikes. To have all of that disappear in a moment of connection is a feeling so close to whatever heaven could possibly be. Deeper down the Mario pipe, shedding the ego skin. Okay, so far so magic. Where's the sickness? Where are the tears? First, and here it is in my own experience, I'm not going to use you pronouns. Traveling the link from, say, myself to the music. Shedding my ego skin means I become raw and sensitive and vulnerable. I cannot travel into this feeling of nowness wearing the shell of normalcy. Okay, second, there is not one end destination. Traveling the pipe, there's no arrival, like if you hopped a plane to Paris. Traverse the link, get where you're going. It's not like that. If only it were so simple. This connection travel is an unknown path to an unknown feeling. Opening up and being vulnerable to the moment requires courage and adventurousness. It would be like taking a plane to Paris, but Paris might have the Eiffel Tower or the Grand Canyon, and you won't know until you go, until you set eyes on it. Third, maybe these passageways are in the brain. They're neural pathways instead of Mario pipes. And maybe some of these routes are very well traveled. Maybe when I warp through a connection with, say, a song, I have a habit of going deep, of shedding myself, becoming vulnerable. And then what happens is veering hard to the side, taking, say, a left turn, to where the beauty of the connection becomes the pain of the connection. Moments seem to straddle the line. That's why we have words like melancholy. Turn one way down the road and bliss might be waiting, but more often than not, I turn the other way down the road and pain washes over me. It's too precious. It's too fleeting. This life is so delicate. This tiny strand, this tiny moment that will be over when I blink. This train of thought maybe leads to tears, and they're tears of fear and loss. It's a stressful moment. These well-worn pathways. Maybe my habit is in the direction of sadness. Maybe straddling the line, once my ego skin has burned off in the atmosphere of the moment, I hurt myself in veering hard left. Maybe a tendency to wound oneself is not only in the overt actions of self-harm, but also in these well-trodden neural highways. Maybe I can change direction. Veer right instead. Intercept. Bliss is so close. It's just a hop across the line. Again, imagining that when you connect to something, when you begin a relationship with something, and here I'm going off script a little bit, so if there's more ums and ahs, that's why, you're opening some kind of channel. You can imagine it as like a tether or like a tube or something like that. Visually, whatever appeals to you, whatever metaphor makes sense. But there's a link between you and the thing, in that a relationship becomes formed and you're focused on the thing itself as opposed to yourself. And this isn't like a unidirectional, like I'm going to the song now and then I'm going to have the experience of the song. There's all this emotional content that can be discovered along this path. So as you shed your normalcy and as you go deeper into the experience and get a little further away from everyday reality, you can go in different directions. I mean, you can go on the one side, which I guess I'm calling the right side, directionally speaking, I am left-handed, so I'm not trying to go hard against left-handed people or anything like that. But you go to the right side and there's this really beautiful feeling of connection. Like, connection is beautiful. It's wonderful. Like, who among us does not enjoy connecting to a person, a thing, a place, an experience? our best moments are moments of connection. So the experience of connection can be just the absolute peak of human experience. It's bliss. It can be. And then I just so close to this side of bliss. You could just teeter off the edge, almost like a person on a balancing beam. You can teeter over to the other side and fall off. And that's where, you know, the veering left, the wrong turn, where the same feeling becomes pain. It's so close. They're hovering right beside each other. And in exploring this idea, I was thinking about how that is my habit. My habit is to take that hard left turn where these moments become really sad instead of really beautiful. And those are the tears that I want to overcome. Because if I have tears from maybe like a beautiful moment or like a sort of a peak feeling at a symphony or something like that, those are the kind of tears I want to hang on to, because they indicate to me that I'm moved in some way. My the connection has been reached. It's evidence of like a deep feeling. And I think that's a really lovely thing. But it's this mental habit, these whatever highway travels I do in my brain, where I veer to the side and then I have these painful suffering type tears because I want to hold on to things. I start regretting the fact that life is short and precious, and it's painful that it's precious. It's painful that I care. That's the thing that I want to separate. Those are the tears that I want to take a look at and try to see if I can rebuild or travel new roads in my brain. That's all I'm going to say about the subject today, but thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next one. I guess I'll maybe see is the wrong word in this case.